email ray@rte.ie. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
David Gray, good afternoon.
Hello there.
Good to see you.
Yes, it's nice to be here.
Yeah, so last night, the Three Arena finally got to do the White Ladder 20th anniversary tour gig. how was it?
It was quite amazing. It was breathtaking, really. I think that nothing stood still in the intervening years. And I think given the extra delay that the pandemic has enforced upon us, maybe the energy and anticipation and the need for a sort of musical release has grown exponentially in that short space of time. Whatever it was, it really just went off. It did just take my breath away at times.
So what sort of stuff? Obviously singing along was a part of it.
Singing along like I've hardly ever heard before. It was so loud, I don't think we could hear ourselves on stage at a couple of points. The Olays were out very early on. it was quite incredible, really. The Belfast show was amazing, the way it kicked off there. But last night it started a notch up and it ended up a notch higher.
Yeah.
It was quite mad.
And you have to do it again tonight and again tomorrow night.
It's awful. It's absolutely awful.
Yeah. All that adoration.
I have to enjoy myself.
And then you're back in Musgrave Park in Cork on the 18th of June. And there are tickets available for that, are there?
There are still tickets available for that. So come on, Cork. That could be a really big one as well. I'm very much looking forward to that. But yeah, first I'm just going to put one foot in front of the other and do these two shows. But please, if you'd like to come along, if you've missed out on this opportunity, there's always Cork.
Yeah. And was there a moment last night? Was there one particular moment?
I think that we do a kind of greatest hits set and that kind of warms the room up. And then we have a little interval and come back. And then, of course, the album's played in sequence. So you start with
lovely.
Please Forgive Me, Into Babylon. So it's a big start.
Yes.
And
finish with Say Hello, Wave Goodbye.
That's right. We do. Yes. So I think by the time we got to Babylon, that it was just so loud. I completely forgot what I was doing just for a moment. I couldn't believe it. Even just during the verse, not even the chorus.
Right.
And so I kind of came off the tracks for a moment there. And luckily, everyone else knew the words.
Yeah.
But a couple of times I was just open mouthed, just looking at the whole thing. Everybody on their feet, just going wild, really, and singing along, which is as it should be. I mean, I think for the thing to make sense to me, it has to be this kind of very personal connection that I've got with the crowd through the music. So I'm giving it to them and they're giving me the whole thing back again. So it was quite a lot to take in.
And I've read the sleeve notes that you wrote for the 20th anniversary White Ladders, and it's very much about that, the audience owning it as well.
That's how I see it.
Yeah.
And I think once you've written a song, it's really quite incredible how it takes on a life of its own, and that this record has just taken on a life of its own, and now I've sort of owned up to it, and I'm out there proving that point.
just on the stats, because did you record it in 1998 or 1997?
Yeah,
1998.
So I did.
So officially, it's next year would be the 25th anniversary.
I know. The numbers are becoming a bit confusing.
Yes,
so we've crossed it out on the t-shirts.
Right.
The 2022 has gone over the 2020. It's all a bit mad like that, yeah.
Oh yeah, I never thought about that. The merchandise.
Yeah, I just said cross it out and put 2022 on it. I'm not wasting all these shirts.
Yeah, yeah. And it was recorded mainly, bar This Year's Love, in your house.
Yes, it was.
In London.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's weird doing the songs as we are, which is exactly like they are on the record. So we've got all the sort of tech. I've got my old guitar out. Everything is just exactly as it was on the record. When I start to tread through the music in that way and sing exactly at the right tempo with the right sounds around me, it's weird. I'm sort of back in that room. A little part of me each night is back. With songs like Night Blindness and Silver Lining, I'm sort of transported back into that room.
Yeah.
It's weird. You just find yourself taking exactly the same path. Like there's a sort of a natural way for me to sing those songs. And when all the sounds are right, that's the way I want to go. So I sort of go back right to the beginning of not just the early gigs, but actually the making of the record. There's a strange time travel element to it.
Isn't that lovely? And I was reading as well that Babylon was recorded on a May Day, a lovely May Day.
It was.
And when you'd finished it, and there was a couple of things you mentioned about it, that the traffic, the London traffic, you had to try and muffle that out. And then people had to stay quiet while watching you sing. But then at the end of it, you sort of knew there was something special about the song.
Well, I think what it was I think when you start making recordings, you're sort of emulating things that you've heard before to some extent. You're striving for your own voice and your own sound. And suddenly with that song, it felt, and please forgive me before it, it felt like we were making a music that was ours. And that Babylon seemed to have an effect on other people straight away. I didn't have the objectivity to realise it had potential in a sort of commercial sense, but I was impressed by how enthralled I was by it as a soundscape and a thing. It wasn't like anything I'd done before, and yet it sort of had the main ingredients, my voice and guitar and everything, but it hadn't been diluted or compromised. It was just moving in it. So that it was that I was convinced by. And if you want,
so that's the way it works. I'll point over here and then the music will start.
I see, I got that, right? That was good. Yeah. I didn't think you were doing the Saturday Night Fever thing.
Yeah, so that last night was just, I can hear them nearly in my mind's ear.
It really went off, because I think once Please Forgive Me happens, it sort of releases this crazy energy, and that song has a crazy energy anyway. And not only that, Clune doesn't play in the first set. He comes out and that's the first song he plays, and that's very much his track.
Yeah.
So people love to see him, and there's just this huge sort of roar when he plays the drums, and that sort of energy just stays in the room, and then you start Babylon and it just goes up another notch again.
Well, let's go to Please Forgive Me. Breege is on the line. How are you doing, Breege?
Hi, Ray. Hi, David.
Hello.
Hello.
Now, Breege, Please Forgive Me is your song. Tell us about it.
Well, I met Martin, my husband, 23 years nearly this year, in May 1999. And we have been seeing each other on and off casually. And I'd say it was at a make or break moment. He played David's album one night after a date, and he played the song Please Forgive Me, and the lyrics just jumped out of me, and he basically was just letting me know, this is how I feel, how do you feel? And that was it. Just like that, lightning running through my veins. And, yeah.
And his, obviously.
And his too.
Yeah.
And still is.
And that was the moment.
And that was the moment, yeah.
How long are you married?
We're married 23 years now in July.
Right.
And that was May as well. David said about some of the songs written in May.
Yeah, yeah.
Too.
There's the ones that I feel sorry for, Breege, are the ones who had This Year's Love as their song and it turned out that it wasn't. Because there it goes, This Year's Love is here to...
Better last.
Oh, right, sorry.
Yeah,
better
last.
On. Yeah, sorry. So Please Forgive Me. Breege, stay with us. I'm just going to play a little bit of that.
Please forgive me if I act a little strange. For I know not what I do. Feels like lightning running through my veins. Every time I look at you. Every time I look at you.
Was it in a car or a flat or where was it?
In his Jeep.
His Jeep, right. He played this. I'm intrigued by this. So, here, Breach, have a listen to this now. Was that the way it went?
Pardon?
Did Martin say to you, Breach, have a listen to this now?
Yeah.
That's the way it works. Right. Brilliant. Yeah. Brilliant. Yeah. Right.
So, David spoke out for us.
Yeah. Lovely. Yeah. Lovely. Right. Thanks, Breach. Mind yourself.
Thank you so much.
See you now. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
That's Breach quickly there. Yeah, and I suppose then within years you knew that White Ladder had become a soundtrack to people's lives because they were telling you at gigs, and there wasn't email back then, but how were they communicating it to you?
Well, you can tell from the response and just the way that people, there was something genuine about the record, not just in the way that we'd made it and the way that the songs had been written and sung, but in the way that it grew as a story, which was unusual, you know, the sort of word of mouth success from nothing. It wasn't something that the corporate sort of giants imposed on everybody as the next big thing. It grew from nowhere. And I think that that's part of its story as well. It felt personal to each person that discovered it, and they liked the fact that there was a human sort of something they could relate to about how the songs and the record had originated and succeeded. I think that we all like these struggle stories that come good. So I guess it's a classic. It's
fairy tale, you describe it.
That's how it still feels to me now. I mean, how am I supposed to quantify all this wonderful, basically love and affection that comes pouring down from the seats and the stands around me as I'm playing these songs, because it has, it's become everybody else's, and they're just, and they've got so much to give. So it's a difficult thing to quantify. It is quite magical, really.
And we feel we own you a little bit, don't we, here?
And I guess you do. I mean, you know, it's this country, Ireland, and I've had so many incredible shows and sort of key shows, and it's provided the launch pad for the whole thing going off around the world. So it just wouldn't have happened if it hadn't happened here. It's not just that we had the success that sort of enabled other success. It was the sense of belief and belonging and strength that we gained from all the passion that the audience had here. You know, we really believed it. We went back to England and we thought, yeah, we'll have this.
And you brought Clune over here with a broken arm.
It's a classic play, sympathy play from the off. Doesn't everyone do that? That's right. He was helping a paraplegic up the escalators in the tube station, and the whole thing ended very badly. The guy fell over and Clune broke his wrist. And I called him and said, are you ready for these Irish shows? And he said, I can't, I've got a broken wrist. I said, well, can you still play with the other hand? So we brought him over. Yeah, and that was quite mad. So that was a Whelan show, never to forget. So it's wonderful having Clune back. He's on absolutely fantastic form.
Now on Whelan's, there's a bit of a debate going on. I'm reading here from the Cork Examiner article that your first gig was in Nancy Spain's on Barrack Street in 1992. And then I read elsewhere that your first gig was in Whelan's a couple of years later. So you're the man who knows.
The first gig was in Whelan's. My first tour of Ireland was two shows, Whelan's, and then following night was the Triskell Arts Centre in Cork.
Okay. Right, so that's it. That's put that to bed. At that first night in Whelan's, you've told me before about arriving and thinking there was somebody else playing. There were so many people.
Well, I straight away, the sort of radar came on. Hang on, maybe this isn't real. You know, this could be for somebody else. I've done that one before, the gig where the place is packed and then the disco opens downstairs and suddenly it's just you and the caretaker again. I thought maybe I was about to be tricked, but no, it was all for me. So I do intend to celebrate the anniversary of that first show for sure. Yeah. So that would be February, I think early February 1994. So it would be So a couple of years' time
30
now.
30 years.
I'll be doing the Century Ends Flesh. I'll be doing some shows old school. Okay. I might even bleach my hair blonde. Right. I might not have to at that stage, but anyway, that's definitely on the cards. It's one of many things I've got to try and cram in.
You were introduced on that night onto the stage by Pat Inglesby.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Pat's a famous poet, as you know, and we got on to him and, you know, we wanted him to recreate, do a reconstruction of the intro. But hey, he sent, this is what he sent, and it's lovely. I'd love David Gray to know that one of the honours I received in my life, which means the most to me, was to present David Gray for the first time in Ireland. I will never forget the tidal wave of affection and love that came sweeping up towards him as soon as he appeared on stage in Whelan's. And that love continues to grow.
Oh, well, that's very nicely put.
Isn't it?
Thank you, Pat.
He has a way with words, Pat. Yeah,
well, I mean, what an introduction he gave me that night. I couldn't believe it. And there was this huge cheer at the end and the love story began.
Yeah. John is on the line. John sent us a four-pointed email. How are you doing, John?
Hi, I'm doing good. Thanks very much, Ray.
Say hello to David.
Hello, David.
Hello, John.
Oh, it's great to hear you. It really is.
You've lost your White Ladder album on cassette, have you?
Yeah, no, I had an original on cassette, all right. And I put it away safe and I've been showing it to a few people and I can't find it now. So obviously, it's, I put it away too safe, but I will come across it.
Yeah, you'll find it. Yeah,
I will. I'll tear the house apart to find it.
Now, you're a true Blue fan. You were there before White Ladder.
Sort of. Yeah. No, I couldn't claim credit to be, you know, the world's greatest. There's a lot of people out there who are very, very fond of David.
Yeah.
And I'd like to think I was among them, but I couldn't be the greatest of them, you know.
But you used his words in your Father the Bride speech.
Yes, indeed. Well, I tell you what happened. My daughter got married in 2019, and I was told that I would have to do a Father of the Bride speech, obviously, because my daughter Kate was getting married to the love of her life, Mark McCauley, and I couldn't think what the hell I'm going to do with this particular speech, how I'm going to do it. And I listened to some of David Gray stuff, and I remembered that way back I bought an album. It was basically the best of the early years in 2007. And there was a song on it that always stuck in my mind. It's called Shine.
Yeah.
And there was particular four lines in that that really sort of, you know.
Are you out for a walk with the dog?
I am, on Saturday.
Yes. Yeah.
Will you
will you just stop for a moment? So
I will. Yeah, I will.
Right. Okay.
I'm actually here with my grandson at the moment, right, okay. Alfie. Well, who's my daughter's son.
Oh, brilliant! Brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now you really sound cool. Brilliant there, John. If you can just deliver the four lines from there, it'd be great.
I don't think I can remember them because I'm suffering from a little bit of stage shock.
Oh, are you? Well, I'll do. Maybe I'll pass them over to David.
Have
you got them for that struggle thing? Have you got it there?
Oh, for all that we struggle, for all we pretend, it don't come down to nothing except love in the end.
There you go.
And that summed it up for me because I didn't know we were going to be facing into COVID-19 or wars in Ukraine or downturns in the economy or anything. But I've lived long enough to know that things don't always go smoothly. But at the end of the day, if you've got the people that you love around you and you love them, you'll get through most things, you know?
That's right. Wise words there, John.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, wise words, but they're your words.
Those were your words.
Yeah.
Let's have a fight over it. Yourself and Caroline, the wife, are going to the gig on Saturday night.
We are indeed, and we're really looking forward to it. We nearly missed the date. It was my daughter said, "We got tickets for David Gray," and I said, "Yeah, no, we have tickets there. So you want to check the dates?" So we realised it was actually this Saturday.
Right.
They sort of crept up on us. But we'd been to the Marquee in Cork a few years ago and we had an absolutely fantastic night.
Yeah.
And, I suppose I should say, to embarrass David, he did an a cappella version of Raglan Road on the night.
Did you?
And it was absolutely stunning. There wasn't a sound to be heard in the whole place. He just stopped everybody cold with a fantastic, fantastic song, fantastic rendition.
Thank you. That's just David.
He's just he's a brilliant artist. Fantastic guy, you know.
You're talking to him now, you know.
Sorry, David. Apologies for that.
That was a special night for me, that one as well. I had the bit between my teeth there.
Yeah.
And I had that up tucked up my sleeve for right at the end when everyone thought the singing was over. I thought I'd give them something they weren't expecting. It was really magical.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and I cycle past Raglan Road every day when I was going to work. So it's a particular interest to me, you know?
Right. Yeah.
So it's fantastic.
John, enjoy the gig on Saturday night with Caroline and enjoy the walk with your grandson.
I will indeed.
See you, John. Good luck.
He's listening beside me. He's all goo-goo gaga. Best of luck for the gig.
See you, John. Isn't it, we have to take a commercial break in a moment, but I have to tell you about Rory O'Callaghan. Rory's a huge fan of yours. We spoke to him a couple of weeks ago, and when he was courting his wife Jackie, she and him, their song was Please Forgive Me, but it turns out that she was just sort of, you know, leading him on. She didn't really like Please Forgive Me that much, but because he liked it so much. And his chat-up line in the early days of their courtship was to offer her a ticket for one of your point gigs back in the day, but he was selling it to her. Yeah, that's the type of guy he was. Anyway, they fell in love, got married, had three kids. And when you announced the 20th anniversary gigs, Jackie, knowing how big a fan Rory was, went out and bought tickets. And then, of course, lockdown happened and tragedy happened in their lives. Jackie, at the age of 43... dropped dead one day.
No way.
And Rory got on to us and he just couldn't bring himself to go to the gig, so he offered the tickets through us to a fan. So they're going to be there tonight in Jackie's seat.
Oh, wow.
And Rory just wanted us to tell you the story so you knew it. He's a huge fan of yours. And he says, I'll be listening to David's interview with a mix of sadness and happy memories, if possible pass on my story of how he bookended the most beautiful and fulfilling thing ever to happen to me. There you go.
Wow.
And that was meeting Jackie. So we'll take a quick commercial break.
God.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
There you go, silver lining, and a huge Irish connection there because you recorded it and felt it was lacking something.
I did, yeah. So Colm put some beautiful fiddles on the silver lining, and it took a bit of work, but we got it sounding so sweet. And and the original shows, he was going to come and play with us, but unfortunately he's not available during any of the Irish.
He's in Paris, actually. He's on the line. How are you doing, Colm?
Hello, how's it going?
There's David there now, Colm McNamara. I was reading about the recording of that piece of the song, and I'll play your bit in a moment, but it struck me as two perfectionists in a room banging heads together. Was there a bit of that?
I wouldn't think so, no.
Go on. He's laughing now, he's laughing. So.
Well, I'd say it's a case of, Dave was the chef, and, you know, so it's Dave's call when it comes down to it, you know.
Yeah, all right, okay. So how did it happen? Had you supported David or had he supported you? Which way was it?
No, we supported David, myself and Glenn back in the Warwick Hotel in Galway in... must have been 1994, and I do remember being at that Whelan show, so it must have been around the same time. And, you know, we ended up staying up until the small hours, as I remember it was David and Neil McCall at the time. And then later on, a good dear friend of mine, Bernadette Barrett, started working with Dave. And then in 1998, I suppose, I got the call to come over to London. So I came over and stayed with David and Olivia and did a bit of recording. And I believe there was an interruption, as I remember, for a Man United game.
We don't talk about that at the moment. We don't talk about that. It's that's been paused. Thank God football's been cancelled for a few years. You know, I'm not aware of anything that's still happening in the world of football.
Good times.
Yeah, it was actually 1997 because when we recorded the basic track of Silver Lining, it was earlier than the White Ladder record. So, yeah, it was 97.
25 years ago.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, Colm's got this amazing tone that's highly emotive and very unique. And here we go.
Go on, you can talk over it.
It gives it the magic dust that we needed at that particular moment. So when we were finishing White Ladder the year later, we refashioned everything and we flew those strings in to the new recording. And and hey presto, it's during the gig last night and the night before, the night blindness into silver lining is like a moment of stillness. It's like the eye of the storm. So it's a really lovely thing, I think, for everybody in the room as well. So you were there in all your glory last night, Colin.
Yeah, well, that's so lovely. Thanks, David.
Yeah,
it's been great to. It was great at the time as well. Just how much hard work you'd put in with earlier records, and just to see you hit the motorway and take off. We were very proud of you.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Colin, thanks so much. I know you're busy. Back to what you were doing. Talk to you soon. Thanks, Colin.
Okay, good luck.
Bye. Thanks, Colin.
And because it's a fairy tale, we can tell the story over and over again. That's what people do with fairy tales, don't they? you offered it around the album, and nobody seemed to want to take it from you.
Because that's the way it works, isn't it? I mean, you're sort of if you're sort of soiled goods, as it were. If you've had a few cracks at it and nothing's happened, then the world of pop music works on a sort of newness principle and novelty. You want something else you can talk about. If you've already tried to convince one of the tastemakers or the gatekeepers that this is something they should pay attention to and you've failed, why would you be able to succeed the fourth time around? So it was highly unsurprising, but it forced our hand, and that's all just part of the story that we self-released the record. We pressed a few thousand copies up, and we went on tour in Ireland November 98, and then they started to sell like hotcakes.
Were they in the back of a van or the boot of a car?
They were, yeah. They absolutely were. And in fact, when they ran out before Christmas that year, my manager was away and I had to go round to his house, and they had them stacked up, thousands of White Ladder CDs in his hall. And someone let me in and I had to load them into the back of my Golf and collapse all the seats and then take like 2,500 copies of White Ladder to the airport, to the freight department, where I met this guy with a sort of forklift who basically put them on a pallet, and that was it. They were going to Ireland, and it was
brilliant.
It was a mad thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Suddenly I had this empty car and there was a guy driving away on a forklift, and I thought, is this the record business that I know and love?
Very glamorous.
Sure
very
is. Glamorous. It's like the Wild West. Yeah.
And of course, Donal Dineen brought you to our attention here through No Disco, and you developed a little bit of a friendship with him, and he is responsible for the photograph on the cover of the album.
Yeah, and so much, and for so much more. I think Donal Dineen and Donal Scannell brought me to Ireland to play my first shows, gave me that sort of public airing on Donal's Dineen's show, that sort of drummed up the initial support. But not only that, they introduced me to the world of Irish thinking and music and passion, the whole thing, showed me this country, you know, and that was such a massive part of it. So yeah, when it came down to it, we were in a friend's photography studio trying to get some drums done to finish the record, and Donal came back from Barcelona and he had all these Polaroids, and Yumi, whose husband's studio we were in, is a designer, and she just took a couple of them and scanned them, and literally that was it.
It
was all just done there on the spot, and that was the artwork.
Another guy who was thereabouts, Shane Hegarty, writer and journalist. And Shane joins us on the line now. How are you doing, Shane?
Hey, Ray. Hey, David.
Hello there.
So what was your part in this fairy tale?
Well, I was working for the Mean Fiddler during that tour in 98 and sort of got to hang around a bit in the background. I did some of the press and publicity, but really didn't sort of have to do very much. And there were brilliant people like Dan Ogley and Martin Byrne doing all that work. And for me, like, what was amazing about it was I remember David coming over to do the kind of initial interviews and the initial push for it, and he was kind of modest guy who just clearly just wanted to play music and write music, and he put his heart and soul into this album, and the tour felt like this kind of really big deal. And I don't, you know, the way you're talking there, David, you know, it does sense like it was kind of a make or break sort of time. And to watch those 2 weeks, I've never seen anything like it before. This sort of phenomenon, to see the phenomenon happen almost in real time, where somebody goes from, you know, as you said, almost kind of the bottom in terms of just making the album at home and trying to get it out there, to this huge tour, and the way we've put it, myself and my wife Maeve are going to the show tonight, and the way we put it is, it's like the Grafton Street test. She remembers me talking about how the first day, you know, we would have met, and I don't expect you to remember that, David, but I remember Grafton Street, walking down Grafton Street as you do, just normally hanging around, killing time or whatever, and on the way from one thing to another. And then a few weeks later, walking down Grafton Street and hardly been able to go 20 metres or 30 metres because so many people had seen the shows, so many people wanted to talk to you, and... Yeah, so the Grafton Street test in terms of just how big things yeah. got, that's the metric that is always...
There you go. Over 2 weeks.
Yeah. Oh, it was unbelievable. It was a real... It was proper lightning in a bottle. And every show, the energy of every show, and I would have seen a few of those shows, and every one of them was special. Just to set the magic of it and the energy and... I think it said that kind of just that that it said, you know, David, I've always felt that kind of heart and soul into it. And what I love about it as well, Ray, is that and David would be very modest about this, I'm sure, but like he doesn't seem to have changed over the years. And I remember that even though all this was happening, David sort of remained the same sort of modest guy, just wanted to play music and wanted to get the music out there. And I think that's the thing that I've always kind of loved about yeah. David and his music and his approach and his attitude over the years. So it's just wonderful. We're really looking forward to tonight.
Right.
Thank you, Shane.
Thanks, Shane.
It's true that I've tried to keep my foot on the floor, feet on the floor rather, not just one of them, like a heron. I think things got a bit flighty inevitably when we kind of, the success just took off everywhere. There was in the sort of aftermath almost of White Ladder, the world just changed completely and it was a bit bewildering. And I think all of us in the band, myself included, we lost contact a little bit with reality, as inevitably happens in the time-honoured way when you get that kind of success. I didn't like that detached feeling. And I remember we used to like rush, you know, out the back door of the venue into the tour bus, not meet the fans. It was all a bit like that. And then I got this letter in Ottawa about 2005 from a fan who'd waited all night. And then we'd obviously got hammered in the dressing room and never been to Ottawa. We'd been waiting to you to come to Ottawa, blah, blah, blah. And we waited outside the back door until like 2 o'clock in the morning. And then you rushed out and you didn't bother to sign anything for us. And I thought, yeah, why didn't I bother to sign anything for you? Because if it wasn't for you, I wouldn't be able to do what I do. So, and that was a very hasty reappraisal of just the weird kind of isolation tank that I'd sort of ended up in. So that was when I started to dismantle that and sort of go back towards the audience and trying to sort of be a bit more real, really. But that first White Ladder tour was quite incredible.
And was there a Galway gig in that one? Was that?
Yeah. I mean, I think because we didn't know what we had, and trying to put this sort of electronic music across, it was very humble. It was only me, Clune and Tim. So you just had to let the songs do the work. But what was immediately obvious was just the way that those songs affected the crowd. So Sail Away, Babylon, you saw it instantly, and even for people who'd never heard it. Because the record literally just come out. You just saw it have an instant effect on the crowd. That was quite remarkable. And all we had to do was sit there and do our job kind of thing. So it was...
hard work was done.
A game changer.
Yeah. Shane, enjoy the gig tonight. He's gone. You mentioned Sail Away.
Sail away with me, honey. Put my heart in your head. And pray.
Jenny Savage, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Ray. And, oh, wow, David Gray. How exciting is this? Hello.
Hi.
I can't believe it.
Go on, I'm going to leave you to it now. I'm turning down my microphone as I'm from now.
I'm just so delighted that you're here and I'm going to see you tonight. I'm just delighted. Thank you so much for coming over and sharing your wonderful album again. I was living in London. My son was born in 98, December the 5th, and your album was, I think, just coming out then. So it kept me going through the blurry nights and all that, and I just listened to the mellow tones, and it was lovely. And then it was sort of fast forwarded to 2000 when I'm a nurse and in my infinite wisdom decided to take on a very involved course and work and with a 2-year-old. So I'd be up quite a lot at night with the child and with my course, and you'd be playing in the background and you kept me all together. So thank you, David Gray, for that. And your wonderful music.
Well, it's my pleasure. I mean, once the CD is there, it's yours to do with as you wish. So it sounds like you made good use of it.
Oh, yeah. We played for pleasure as well. But for those quite the moment, it was
child
very
pacifier,
helpful.
Child pacifier.
It was very helpful. And mum pacifying too.
Do you have a favourite from the album, Jenny?
Oh gosh, where do I start? I mean, I love all of them, really, to be honest, you know, but I do love White Ladder and I do love Sail Away. And I mean, I love all of them, really, for various different reasons. And I think everybody does. Mm. You know, as you said earlier, you know, it's a story and we each have our story and our stories relate to that song at that time. And maybe if I listen to it again, I have something else that, you know, that I think about. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So, but it's just wonderful. And I'm just so excited to come and see you tonight and delighted.
Well, sing along. Sing your heart out, Jenny Savage.
Absolutely.
I shall do. Yeah. Thanks again.
Thanks,
take
Jenny.
Care.
Thank you.
Bye,
Jenny.
Bye. See
bye.
You.
Bye. Bye. And we got loads of emails. I can't read them all out. But Sarah Crosby says, I love this album, still do. My sister introduced me to David Gray. She had the album Sell, Sell, Sell. I think. I know she went to his early shows in Dublin too. It always brings me back to the summer I fell in love with James, who I'm married to since 2007. We got together in 2000. Myself and James had the band at our wedding in 2007 to play This Year's Love for our first dance. We've been to see him a few times in concert and it always is brilliant. And we're going again on Saturday. So look forward to that, Sarah. And this is the only song that wasn't recorded in the house in London.
That's right.
And we'll tell the story after we hear a little bit. And so many people thought that This Year's Love... This Year's Love better last.
This Year's Love had better last.
Had better last, yes. Yeah. So yeah. It's a wish on behalf of the singer.
That's right, yeah. I mean, I wrote that one for the movie This Year's Love, which sort of happened while we were recording White Ladder. We were invited, or I was invited, to write some music for This Year's Love and to be in the film. So it was the first sort of commission I'd ever had. And I was a little uncomfortable about being commissioned to write a song. I sort of thought I just wrote about what I felt like writing about. But I think we had a night out with the director and the producer and we ended up in town and it all got a bit late and a bit messy. And I kind of woke up the next morning thinking, yeah, I mean, why am I fobbing them off? And then I just kind of called and said, yeah, I'll have a go at this, no problem. So I just started with the title of the film and this is the song that came out and it didn't cost me a huge amount of time. It just seemed to click. And in a way, it's become like my biggest song, really, in terms of streaming. I think that's chiefly because of the kind of romantic nature of it, that it gets put on every sort of Valentine's Day and it's on all these kind of, you know, these wedding people, these people insist on getting married, you know, everywhere across the world all the time. And Fall in Love is just awful, isn't it? It's like a tidal wave of joy that I'm somehow involved in. So it has a life of its own, yeah, for sure. And it was the only one that we needed a real piano. So I kind of knew the people at Air Studios and so did the film people. So they swung it for us to get in there. And they said, if you turn up at 10, you'll need to be out by 2. So you can have the big piano room. But I thought we were in Studio 1 or Studio 2, rather, which is a very large recording studio. But we were actually in the orchestral room and they put the Steinway in the centre of the room. It was completely ridiculous. So we went from my bedroom, basically my spare bedroom, to suddenly... But, I mean, I think we were so vibed up that, you know, we had the take in the can by... you know, about 45 minutes in. So I think I did two or three takes and that was it. And then Clune put his bass down. I tried some guitar on the song, which we never used. And then we took the rest of the time to actually, well, Yestin, the producer, said, well, we're here, we might as well make use of the gear. Let's mix this track. So we mixed This Year's Love without the strings there and then. So we did a mix of it too.
All in 4 hours?
In less than 4 hours. Then we said, this is when we transferred Colm's strings from Silver Lining into our new version of Silver Lining. We did that as well. Then Clune set the fire alarms off with his toasty machine. Right. Yeah. And our whole studio had to empty into the car.
He travels with a...
He does.
He's
a man of very precise habits and eating habits in particular. So he could become incredibly disturbed and distressed if he sort of misses the right food at the right time. Yeah. So yes, to eliminate any sort of possible permutations and variety in his day, he carries all the equipment and food around with him, corned beef, slices of bread and a toasty machine. So yeah, he went into a back room and went to make his lunch and set the fire alarms off. So that was the This Year's Love day.
4 hours. Here we are celebrating at last the 20th anniversary of White Ladder. We could have been sitting here celebrating the 20th anniversary of Meet the Beach Donkeys. I don't think it would have worked as well.
That was the effect of, I don't know, illegal substances.
Oh, right. But that was suggested as a title for the album.
We didn't know what to call it. And I think going through the song titles, we just kind of like, you can't call it This Year's Love. That sounds a bit cheesy. And, you know, Babylon. White Ladder ended up being picked simply because it was kind of ambiguous, really, and intriguing. And that felt like the best fit. But yeah, while we were sort of pondering this, what are we going to call the album? This is the same day that Donald Deneen turned up with the photos. And we were kind of decompressing at the end of a busy day. And the paper was just lying open and the Beach Donkeys. And someone said, Meet the Beach Donkeys. I said, yeah, that sounds kind of good, doesn't it? And then we all kind of bought into it and then woke up the next morning thinking, what? I mean, it was so thankfully.
Listen, tonight and tomorrow night and before you go on stage tonight, you're going to do the Late Late Show so people can see you performing on the television. I've really enjoyed, and I'm sure our listeners have, and everyone who talked to you today coming in, you having the chat about 25, 23, 24, whatever number of years it is since White Ladder. And it's great to see you. Thanks very much, David.
Thanks, Ray.
And we have to finish here, don't we? We have to finish on Say Hello.
All right.
Wave goodbye. Goodbye.
Standing at the door of the pink flamingo, crying in the rain. He was a kind of so love, and I'm gonna make sure it doesn't happen again. You and I, it had to be the standing joke of the year.
Back to the Point Theatre via the Late Late Show studio. David Gray, what a gentleman. We've had loads and loads and loads of texts. I can only read out a sort of a few that are representative of the hundreds we've got in. I got dumped after a David Gray concert in Galway, 2006. Very sad. And it's all about love and romance and broken hearts. I remember my then girlfriend singing this year's Love to me after we broke up and got back together. Then she broke up with me again. Thanks, David. I don't know if the tone is right there. Des says, was working in the music biz a long time ago and met David at one of his first gigs in Ireland. I was struck by his generosity of nature, a true gentleman. Yep. And listening to David Gray, went to Greece in 2000 for the summer with a bunch of friends. We had one CD and about 20 of us on the island for 3 months. We listened to White Ladder, that was the CD, day and night. Had parties and White Ladder playing on a loop. So anytime I hear any song from White Ladder, I'm back in Greece drinking and having a blast with my friends, says Margot. I'll get to more of those after 4 o'clock, but we have to take another commercial break and then we're going to Nuked after that.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.